1, 2, 3, come! Ringing Beatles.
Woo!
Is our podcast.
Hey!
Counting down, 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 down.
Ah.
Yes.
Yes.
A little new Beyonce.
We're back, baby.
Well, I guess it's not new now. It's
new-ish.
New when we recorded this.
Yes.
And now it is not new, but still a jam.
It's a jam. It's probably still the number one country song.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm guessing when this episode comes out.
We're going to have to look it up.
Have to see.
I'm going to set a reminder on my phone.
Yeah. Good idea. Friends, we're back. Thanks for waiting around for us. It's Ranking the Beatles, season number 8. I don't know, whatever. Hope you're all doing well, though. It's episode 121.
Oh, yeah.
We have been off on a little end of last year, early this year break. And we've missed you guys. Hope y'all are doing good. It's been a hot minute.
Have you missed us?
We hope you've missed us. We've heard we've seen messages that have made me think you miss us. So
there's like three of you.
There's like three of y'all.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Hi, so, welcome back.
We're back, man. It's been a while. We just went to the Fest for Beatles Fans in February,
mm-hmm.
which was a fantastic time.
So much fun.
We met a whole bunch of people that we've talked to on the show before and gotten to know through kind of the Beatle fan community and hung out in real life and had drinks and got drunk and had a great old time.
Oh, I don't think we got drunk.
We didn't get drunk. You know, I mean, we had cocktails.
We had cocktails.
Cocktails
were
had.
A good time.
A lot of laughs.
A lot of laughs, man. Well, we were hanging out with the Blotto, so
it comes
to the territory.
But highly recommended if you are debating going to the Fest for Beatles fans. And this is not a paid promotion. But if you're a Beatle fan and you want to go be around other Beatle fans, go to the Fest for Beatles fans.
We also met some listeners.
We did. We met a handful of listeners.
That was so cool.
Yeah.
It was so nice for people to walk up and be like, "Hi, I listened to your show." And I'm like, "Why? I'm an idiot."
I love when people are like, "I don't want to talk to you, Jonathan. I want to talk to Julia." That made me feel really happy.
It was like one person.
And I was like, cool, I'm going to go to the bathroom. You guys hang out and be best friends.
Aww.
Yeah. It was a good time.
People like
I'm glad
you.
We did it. They do, but they like you too. And I want you to know that.
Thank you.
You have fans. Julia Heads.
I have fan.
Julia Heads, they call themselves.
Stop it. That sounds gross. I don't like it.
Oh, God. What
There's
else
gotta
has been
be a
going
better name.
On? What else? Ooh. What can we call
don't
Julia
go down
fans?
That. Yeah.
Listeners, let us know what we can call Julia's fans. I think this is ripe for fun. I'm into this idea.
I'm terrified.
What else is going on since you've been gone? The 4 Sam Mendes directed Beatle biopics mm-hmm. were announced, which mm-hmm. is going to be amazing. Super excited about it. We hope. You know what? I am looking at the positive. I think it's going to be great. I'm hoping it's going to be great. I'm staying upbeat and positive, and, you know, I think it's going to be really cool.
Bare minimum, they will be entertaining.
Bare minimum, we will go see 4 movies in the theater.
Oh.
In 1 year.
That's a lot for
which
us.
Which we don't do, but yeah.
Oh, boy.
That'll be cool.
Oh, boy.
And, so that's about it. Otherwise, you know, we just been living the life, man. Got to take a little break every now and then and give ourselves a little R&R and a little recuperation time. And
that's what R&R stands for.
Yes.
Rest
and recuperation. I thought it was radness and rigatoni. Need
also,
a little R&R.
I need some R&R for my R&R.
Some radness and rigatoni.
I need some rest and recuperation for my radness and rigatoni. Honestly,
yeah,
like that's true because
works.
What did we do in New York? We
ate a lot of pasta. Did some rad stuff.
So that's fair.
Yeah. And when I came back from vacation, I came back from New York tired, man.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was exhausted. And we had come home to Mardi Gras.
Yeah. Which,
so
rad.
Yeah. I need
no
to
rigatoni,
sleep for
though.
Like a week.
Yeah. I could still use some naps.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's enough about us.
Yeah. Well, we're glad to be back. We got a whole bunch of stuff coming for you guys this year. 94 songs to count down. Like, we're getting there, man. Like, last year we did, I think, 35 episodes, something like that. Hypothetically, if we kept that same rate going, we could be done with this in 3 years. I don't know that it'll happen, but you know, we're getting on the we're on the back nine, maybe, of the old rank in the Beatles. I don't know.
The back 90.
I don't know. Recently, somebody chastised us on Twitter in a joking matter, debating who would finish their ranking first: the Blotto Beatles, who release an episode every 2 weeks, or Ranking the Beatles, who release an episode every week, but then take like 9 months off. Which we don't take 9 months off,
this
man.
This is a race to the bottom.
I felt a little called out there.
That's fine. This was an extraordinarily long break. I feel like they haven't been this long before.
Well, we had the fest, and then we had Mardi Gras, and we traveled.
Well, it was like the holidays, and then right into fest, and then right into Mardi Gras. And then now we're recording, so we have to like bank some before we start back up. So
good things come to those who wait, y'all. We got good episodes coming.
For sure.
Good songs.
Speaking
good
of
guests,
good episodes, good guests, let's good songs.
Segue. I love it. Well done. You should go pro at this. Just a thought.
Who's going to pay me?
You can buy a coffee and thread $5 Julia's way. Let's do it, y'all. Our guest this week is a journalist and content creator with a background in music and entertainment journalism. I don't know how to quantify this, but pretty sure that they're probably one of the most popular Beatles-related content creators in the social media world. They were one of the co-hosts of the Apple Scruffs podcast, which is really good and very George-centric, and I'm not sure if they're still going. It's been a while since they last put out an episode. I should ask about that. And they've been featured on a ton of other Beatles podcasts as well. They work in social media content creation for the Fest for Beatles fans, and will be partnering with the Brooklyn Museum as social media consultant and content creator for the upcoming Paul McCartney Eyes of the Storm photo exhibition in New York City.
Very excited.
Which, you should go see this this exhibition if you can. If you're in New York, or if it comes to your town whenever you listen to this episode in the future, you should go see that, because I like to go see that. And maybe we will one day.
Okay.
Hopefully. But, y'all, without any further ado, please welcome to Ranking the Beatles, Skylar Moody. Skylar, welcome to Ranking the Beatles. How are you on this lovely afternoon / evening?
I am doing great. I'm living life.
Yeah? Good. How,
oh, yeah.
How are things post-Beatles Fest for you?
It's been crazy. I feel like it's finally starting to reach that point where we're calming down, though, because post-Fest, you always want to reach out to so many people that you just met. You want to say to your friends, oh, it was so good to see you. It's just a whole bunch of, you know, communication after that, sharing photos, sharing videos, just reliving the weekend, and then it all simmers down until the next one, which won't be till August, though, so I've got some time to cool.
Yeah. And how many Fests have you gone to now?
The last Fest I went to, I went in 2018 once. That was my first Fest. It was only for a day. Mm-hmm. And then I went to both Fests in 2022. I went to both Fests last year. So this was my sixth Fest.
Nice.
And it was my fourth on staff.
So how did you get involved with the Fest? I'm curious about that.
Well, when I first went back in 2018, that's when I was in college, and the Fest weekend, it happened to be when I was home from college for spring break. So I begged my parents to take me as my birthday present, and they did. And I was just thriving the entire time. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm in my community of people. You know, I can compete in trivia contests. I can go listen to lectures of people talking about the Beatles. I can hear their music. I can go shop for merch. This is paradise for me.
Yes.
And then, of course, I didn't have much of an opportunity. I could never afford to fly out to Chicago at that time. And then anytime any other Fest was scheduled, it was while I was away at school. And then the pandemic hit, so we lost 2020 and 2021. But then in 2022, that was the year that I also started to get really involved with posting Beatles content on social media. I was starting to build my TikTok channel, YouTube, everything of the sorts. And I really wanted to get involved in Fest because I thought, you know, I'm so great at social media, like I want to try to get in there and everything. And at the time I was starting to make friends in the Beatles community, and I was talking with Simon Weitzman, and he was talking about how he was going to be premiering his fan documentary at the New York Fest in 2022, and he really wanted me to be there because he was trying to get me a part of the movie, which I am in the movie, spoiler
nice,
alert
nice.
If you ever get to watch it, I will be there. But he really wanted me there because he wanted me to grab footage for the movie that he was possibly going to use. He wanted me to be there to see the sneak peek screening. So he got me in touch with Mark Lapidos. So then I got to meet him and kind of introduce myself. And then I was able to get out to that fest and kind of vlog and do my thing. And I was there for the full weekend, and it was my first full weekend there. And after that, I said, shit, I can't miss this ever again. Right. I have to go to every fest for the rest of my life because it will be too much FOMO if I don't. So then I ended up going to Chicago that year, because after New York Metro Fest, I started talking to Danny, who runs the social media account. So I was starting to meet up with him. I explained everything that I was doing at the past fest. Simon once again got me introduced to Danny. So major shout out to Simon. Yeah. He really got me out there. He got me started. So then I spoke with Danny. I was able to get out to Chicago that year. It was a blast. And then since then, I've just been on staff helping him out, helping to promote Fest, run the social media. And then I'm doing my own content for my own channels. And it's been the most fun job I've ever had.
Yeah.
I hope my boss doesn't hear that. I love it working there, I promise. Right. But this is my second favorite job, actually, yes, that I've ever had. Wink,
wink. You know, I love it because, like, you know, Julia and I have been on social media since, I don't know, God. We were like, we're of the generation where, like, we were in college when Facebook came out and you had to be in college to have a Facebook. And then, like, we were there through MySpace and then into Twitter. And
I was on BBSs before like Facebook was even like
LiveJournal and stuff like that.
Yeah, like
I don't even know what that is.
Exactly. Yeah, this was like probably like 1995, maybe like 96, 97, something like that sort of. And it was like these very rudimentary sort of like channels where you could talk to people and like play games and stuff. Like this was like way, way back in the day. And then there was like LiveJournal. And then that spawned on to, I guess, like Friendster and Facebook. Well, no, there was like a MySpace in there before Facebook. And then, yeah, we've done the whole internet journey.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And so you've seen it all. Now you see where it is today and you think, wow. Because you could only do, you can do practically everything now. There's an app for absolutely everything.
Yes.
And it's
not
been
even just a simple like post a picture anymore.
Yeah. It's been a journey. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, when we started doing Ranking the Beatles in 2020, I want to say it took a little while before I started a Twitter account for it. I think at first I was just like, I do enough social media between like the bands I'm in, like I don't want another Twitter account, but eventually started a Twitter account. And then through there, started an Instagram. And then at some point your content came into my feed and it was such a joy to find like really fun, informative, like well done, fun content about something that I knew, like I didn't realize the extent of like the online fandom of like Beatle fandom, like the online presence of fandom.
We're everywhere.
And like
Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, like you got to dig for it, but you will find a community.
And I was like overjoyed. I was so overjoyed when I found it because like, I feel like on some platforms, like it's all people our age and older, but then on others, it's people your age, younger, my age, older, and like everyone for the most part is really cool. And it's like, oh my God, I found my people in an online world again. Literally. This is amazing. Like, I love it. So like,
it's a mixed bag. Like I see different generations on all platforms because TikTok, I mean, the majority of it is a younger audience. Like preteen, teenager, young adult, my age. But then I also get some first generation fans that are in my comment section or liking my stuff. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I never thought I'd see that. And then, you know, Twitter, it's the same thing. Facebook, I would say it's more so the older crowd. And that's the only thing that I've ever seen in that sense. But everywhere else, it's just such a wide range of ages. And it's amazing to see how far it goes.
Yeah.
And I've met the majority, like all of my friends who love the Beatles, like I met all of them online. Because it's so rare. It's not like I can walk out the front door right now and go find someone my age who's as big of a Beatles fan as me. It's just you so happen to go on the internet and you can find fans online that you can talk to. And if they live in your area, then that's just a bonus. Like I have a whole friend group. They all live in New York City, thankfully. And then I'm right next door. So I get that. I get it in person. I get it online. And it's a blessing.
Yeah.
And Beatles fans, we are unlike any other fandom, in my opinion. I have just the amount of love and community that I have seen within this group of fans is extraordinary because I get to see it at Fest. I get to see it online and it's just incredible. It's the best place to be.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, the history now that has just kind of naturally happened through it of, you know, going all the way back to, your Frida Kellys and like the boots on the ground in 1963 who kind of started it, and then how it's continued all the way through. Like, you're part of that kind of amazing through line of people who are like putting the, I hate to say getting the word out there, because like obviously everyone knows who the Beatles are, but like,
right,
you know, making it,
sure it sticks in their minds, yeah, and giving them like giving a fun creative twist to it so that they want to learn more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And not just saying like, oh, the Beatles are cool, like whatever, but saying like, this is why they're cool. Like, here's a bunch of fun facts for today. Like, here's a cool story today. Like, here's one snippet of information that sticks out to me that I think you might want to know about. Like, I think that's one of my favorite things about this podcast is, like, I sort of know the Beatles as an entity. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that they exist. I know a lot of the songs. We've gone through a few that I'd never really heard. But just, like, learning the little deep dives, like, the little interesting stories, the little tidbits that I'm like, huh.
Like, the next level of knowledge. Like, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And there's that just everything. They all have their lore. They all have their lore in every story. Just the deeper that you go, the more you go, what?
Right.
How? And you just want to keep learning more. Like, that's how I was when I first became a fan. It was just like, oh my gosh, tell me more right now. I did not know they were this chaotic.
Yes. Yes. And like, you have the advantage of like, all of it is out there for the most part, like easily accessible. Right. Like, for me, like, I was like borrowing records from aunts and uncles and like going to the library to like check out the encyclopedia to like read about the Beatles and like finding like the one book that they might have in the New Orleans public library system.
I started with going to the library and trying to find books and literally borrowing CDs from the library to then download onto my computer. Anything that my parents didn't have, I started doing that. And I, even then, like, they weren't even on Spotify yet at that point. I mean, the only place that I could get it was, you know, buying on iTunes or if I wanted to go on YouTube. But I'm like, no, I want this on my phone and I want it for free. And the library is my answer.
Yes.
Shout out to public libraries time and time again.
Every time. Amen. Get that Libby app on your phone. Read all the books for free. So, yeah, what is kind of your Beatles origin story? I know you touched on it briefly in some panels at the festival, but I'd like to know, you know, a little bit more on our listeners to know kind of where you come from as a Beatle fan. What's been your journey with that?
Okay, so I obviously grew up listening to them. They were always played in my house. My parents are big Beatles fans, not to the extent that I am now. I kind of just said, they said, oh, we're Beatles fans. And I said, oh, that's cute. And then I'm who I am today. But I heard them growing up. I heard them on the radio, you know, like I would hear a song. I might not have known it was by the Beatles, but then if you played it for me, I'd say, oh yeah, I know that. So that was the extent of my knowledge. Like I knew their names. I was like, oh, okay, they're British. You know, they were this big, huge band, you know, Beatlemania, it was a huge thing. That was the extent of my knowledge. And then when I got to high school, I started becoming really interested in music history in general. Like, I would always find certain artists to obsess over. I remember Michael Jackson was a big one for me. And I was just always fascinated by, you know, the history of an artist, like their origin story and how they came to be in the music world and how they influenced generations of fans. And I was always going online and making fan pages and trying to, you know, find friends and interact and, you know, spread the word about how great of a musician they were. Like, that was just, it was my passion from the start, basically. But I started getting into all of that. And that was my freshman year of high school. And I discovered that at my school, they were offering a semester long music history class. And I thought, oh my God, I want to get into that class so bad. And I almost didn't. That's a whole other story. But thankfully, it got put into my schedule for my sophomore year. And I started taking that class. And obviously, you can't not talk about the Beatles. So when we finally got to that point, I was thinking, okay, cool, the Beatles, I kind of know who they are. We listened to a couple songs and I was thinking, okay, yeah, I've heard these songs before, I know who they are. And then my teacher said, oh, and they made a couple movies back in the 60s. There's A Hard Day's Night and Help. And I said, they made movies? What? I didn't know that. And he said, yeah, and then tomorrow I'm gonna play A Hard Day's Night for you guys, we're gonna watch it. And I thought, okay, this should be interesting. So we're watching it, you know, at first I'm kind of just warming up to it, but then I just got to see all of their humor. Like, this was the first time I was seeing their personalities and who they were. Like, I knew the music for the most part, but I never got to see how they acted with one another. So I was just eating it up, and then everyone around me was falling asleep. They were that bored, and I was the only one. Just literally, I remember it took a couple class periods for us to watch it, but I think after the first or second class that we were watching it, one of my friends came up to me and was saying, oh, so were you falling asleep during that class too? And I'm like, no, I actually liked what we were watching. And so I walked away with that information. I knew that. And then a couple weeks later, it really started to, you know, kick into my system. I'm like, oh, the Beatles. I'm gonna look up a couple interviews. I'm gonna listen to a couple more songs. And it was full speed ahead from that moment, just instantly obsessed. My dad has pretty much every single album of theirs on CDs. So I started downloading them onto my computer to put them on my phone. I was just watching interviews. I was going on Vine and watching Vines. Oh, if anyone remembers that app out there, I was just watching edits. I was so quick to just go find fan pages because I said, I know what I want to look at. I got to find people that are my age. I got to know that I'm not crazy. And I figured that I was like, okay, this is probably an obsession that's only going to last a year. I don't care, but I'm going to run with it. And now it's been almost 10 years.
Yeah.
And this is where we're at today, but that is how it all got started.
Oh, I love
that. I want to say I came to it on my own, but also at the same time, I had that influence from my parents. Like, they didn't force it upon me. It was always just background music, but it was some form of an introduction. Yeah. So I got to give them credit for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see you've got a...
And a shout out to my music history teacher for showing A Hard Day's
Yes.
Night.
Yes.
That was my gateway drug.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I see you've got a Tommy poster in the background there.
Yes, that's my parents. They
nice.
Saw the play, I want to say 6 or 7 times back when it first came out on Broadway.
Oh. Oh,
and
wow.
It's having its revival right now. They're starting previews tomorrow, actually, and then it opens at the end of the month. And they got us tickets to go see it for my birthday
nice.
In a few weeks.
Oh,
so
that's killer.
I get to go see it for the first time, and
nice.
I'm very excited.
They probably saw it with Michael Cerveris as Tommy, who we had on as a guest, I guess, 2 years ago.
Oh, it was a while ago,
He lives part-time here in New Orleans, and he's an actor and musician.
Wow.
And he was Tommy in the original Broadway production of Tommy. So
they probably did see him, yeah.
Super cool.
They were always the first to try to go to any Broadway show.
Nice.
Love that.
You can see, like, if you look closely at the poster, they have, like, all of their ticket stubs from
every time
that they went.
Oh, cool.
And it's a lot.
That's awesome.
It's a lot.
Yeah, they... Oh, that's
and
great.
And I told them, I'm like, no spoilers. Like, I'm listening to the original album from The Who.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to the Tommy album, but I'm not listening to the Broadway soundtrack because I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of the songs I'm listening to on the album, like, I'm listening to Cousin Kevin and Fiddle About, and I'm like... Okay.
Where's this going?
I don't want to know.
Yeah.
I don't want to know what's going to happen on stage, but we'll see.
Have you seen the film version of it yet?
No, but I've heard not so good things. I know my parents aren't a fan of it.
It's not, I don't know, it's weird. It's weird in that, like, weird 60s band makes a movie kind of way, like, in the same way that...
Yeah.
Not.
I get that vibe.
It's not as weird as, like, Magical Mystery Tour. It's not weird in that way.
I would hope not.
It's not
that's its own category,
yeah.
Honestly.
It's not like...
It's its own genre of film.
Yeah, and it's not like the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band movie, which is just, like, generally awful. I don't know. It's weird in its own weird way. It's worth a watch, but, you know...
Probably at least once.
Yeah.
Just for the laughs.
If only to, like, to see Tina Turner and, like, Elton John and all these people just be, like, amazingly weird. Like, worth your time.
Welcome to the 60s.
Yeah, right. What other kind of music rings your bell? What else is on when you're listening to music aside from the Beatles, if it's not the Beatles?
I am a huge Motley Crue fan.
Nice.
Which that always throws people off.
Wow.
When I say that they're my second favorite, just because it's on a complete different end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
But I absolutely love them. It was their biopic, The Dirt, which got me into their story because they were just so different from the Beatles. And I remember, it's a very explicit movie.
Yeah.
Very graphic, not in, like, you know, gore in that sense. Other kind of explicit.
Sure.
But I was watching it and I was thinking, who are these guys? Like, they're brave enough to make a movie like this?
Right.
I need to know more. So it was that same, you know, kickstart. And then Elton John, I am a huge fan of. It
nice.
Was mainly fan my whole life. But then I saw Rocket Man. I went to the Rocket Man premiere in New York.
Cool.
And then that just... completely took off there. Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody. Do you see a pattern here?
Yeah, I did.
It's always a music biopic.
Yeah.
It always does it for me. But Queen, I'm a huge fan of. I love Aerosmith. I love Badfinger. I'm now starting to really enjoy The Who just from listening to Tommy.
Yeah.
That has been the only album I've been listening to this entire week.
Nice.
But all artists like that, really just in the rock genre.
Yeah.
But I like everybody.
Yeah. It's so fascinating how the biopic seemed to really pull you in. I've got to assume that you are excited about Sam Mendes's upcoming 4 Beatle films.
Excited, but extremely nervous.
Same.
I am going to be. It's because I'm not going into this blind. I know too much about the Beatles. I know their music. I know the way they act. I know the way they look. I know their relationships with each other. I know their breathing patterns. I can tell their hands apart in different photos if you cut out their faces. Like, that's how invested I am. So I know, like, immediately if I see an actor that I'm even a little bit iffy about, it's going to be ruined.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it needs to be perfect. And I know it's not going to be perfect because no biopic is, but I want it to be as close to perfect as it can get because these are my boys. I don't want there to be any kind of misconceptions whatsoever. Like, it needs to be told wholeheartedly, like, the entire truth. And if it's not, then I'm going to be mad, which might make for good content, but I don't want to be mad. I want to go in there and have it be the most enjoyable experience it can be.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes these movies are like a little glossy.
Oh, 100%.
Like, they 100%. Just, yeah. It's like, okay, but like, at this, you know, like, these were, they're human.
You gotta dig deep.
Yeah. They sometimes did some messed up stuff and were bad people. And just like,
And it's hard because, you know, I feel like those movies 9 times out of 10 are not made for us. They're made for, like, the casual fan who enjoys might own Queen's Greatest Hits, and yeah, they'll go see Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. You know, they might own the Beatles 1 album and think that's really great. And they might go see the Paul movie. Like, so I don't know how they're going to. I think the approach is really interesting, and I'm really excited to see how that works. But I'm kind of in the same vein of, like, please don't make it, like, a very glossy, you know, pretty Hollywood kind of.
Show everything. Show the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Because that's what makes the story what it is. It's, like, because they are human and they're messed up kids, you know, like, there's warts and all. Like, you need to kind of have all that, I think, to really understand.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah. We need all that.
That's what it all was.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that it's at least – that it's 4 individual films because – that was my biggest worry, was that they're going to skip over a lot of things in the story because there's not going to be, you know, enough time to fit it into 2.5-3 hours maximum. But the fact that they're each getting their own, we could have 4 3-hour movies and they could go into as much depth as they want to. And it's me thinking, oh, thank God, you know, there's some hope there.
Yeah.
That is the one silver lining that I have found so far. And now I'm nervous about the cast announcements. I'm going to get nervous when they announce official release dates because I just know I'm going to have a lot to prepare.
Yeah.
Me already overthinking, and it's not until 2027. This is how my brain works. I'm like, there's so much to do. There's not enough time.
You turn around and pull down like a giant chart.
It's like, oh, it's going to be like, oh, John Lennon movie coming out. And I'm going to go, huh? No, not yet.
We're not ready
yet. I want these movies, but I don't want the movies. I'm like, no, I'm not ready. Not yet. I can't do this right now.
That's actually a really good jumping point for a question I had for you, which was, you know, how do you come up with kind of the content that you do create, and what kind of drives you to decide on the things that you choose to share?
It's a lot of on-the-fly content, especially if it's, you know, trending audio on TikTok. Sometimes I just automatically think of, you know, a Beatles scenario or anything like that I can relate to it. And then that's super quick. But then other times I plan it out. Like, if I know there's going to be, you know, a big release of something, like when Get Back was coming out, I knew I was going to have to make videos on that. So I was kind of taking notes and preparing. If I know there's an anniversary of something coming up, then I usually take notes and prepare for that. But most of the time it's just, you know, whenever an idea pops into my head and I want to create it, then I've set aside time to film if I have to, if it takes a long time. And then I just end up putting it out there, anything that I think my followers will find funny or interesting. And then it's the most stressful when there's breaking news. Like when the news broke out about Paul's bass, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to find out everything right now. And I have to make a video super quick. And I did it, but it's stressful.
Yeah.
It is stressful when stuff like that comes out. But really, I just know if it's anything Beatles, I know my followers are going to be interested in it. And it's the most fun when I try to think of little skit ideas, because that's when I can really, you know, like, dive into my humor, and I try to find situations that, you know, other, you know, young fans might relate to, or even older fans might. Like, I made a video that was talking about, like, oh, this is how it was when I first became a Beatles fan, you know, and it was me talking and being all exciting and then everyone trying to, you know, tear you down because they're saying, oh, why do you like older music? Why are you into that? Like, how was this interesting? Blah, blah, blah. And of course, a lot of people are going to relate to that because a lot of friends that I've talked to or even fans now online, they all became fans when they were, you know, young teenagers like myself. So then you have other young teenagers that are kind of dogpiling on you because that's their mindset. They want to think that they're too cool for the Beatles. Mm-hmm. And so I know that's something that I was able to relate to. I know that others can relate to it. So then I make content about that. And it's the fact that people can all just talk about it and they know that struggle and they all want to say, oh my gosh, I go through the same thing. I go through this thing. Oh my gosh, I'm sending this to my friend because, you know, their friends might act that way.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. anything that can just bring the community together, that's what I like to do.
I love it.
I heard that so many times at the fest of like, yeah, I started to become a fan when I was a teenager and I was the only one in my school and everyone made fun of me.
Yeah, like I was the one. I had one other friend super big Beatles fan, but that was it. I never really got, you know, bullied in that sense. Mm-hmm. You know, some people would kind of question it. They'd kind of be like, oh, you're a big Beatles fan? Okay. Like, you know, they would kind of give me that look like, okay, mm-hmm. cool. But like, you know, they wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
Like, and it was like, okay, yeah. Then it was just me rattling on and on about them. And they'd be like, okay, like, be quiet, please. Like, we're done. That's it. Yeah. And now, look, now I'm on social media doing it and
right.
making a somewhat living off of it. So that's how that turned out.
So eat it. Yeah. Because I was you when I was in school. Like, you know, like grunge was hitting and I was like, it's all angry. And this is very happy. And this makes me happy. I like this Beatles thing a lot. And I would just get like openly mocked by like the cool kids in my school. It was like, I had no friends who liked the Beatles. It was like me and my math teacher. And that was it. But
that's all you need.
Yeah. But now
you just need that one person.
Right. I had the one and it was fine. So. And now you've got this amazing collaboration coming up with the Brooklyn Museum for the Paul McCartney photo exhibit. Yes. That's amazing. Tell us about that.
Yes. Okay. So I knew that it was going to be a touring exhibit. I knew that it was going to come to New York at some point, but I didn't think it was going to be this soon. So I think it was early January that they made the announcement that it was coming to Brooklyn. And at first, my first thought was, oh my gosh, yes, it's finally coming to New York. I can go see it. And then the marketing social media side of my brain said, you need to get in contact with their staff immediately. So I was doing a LinkedIn deep dive that day, just trying to find anybody that was in their marketing, communications, social media. And I ended up finding someone who I had like a mutual connection with. And I said, hey, do you know who this person is at the museum? And she said, yeah, I can put in a good word for you. I can give you her email. So then I ended up emailing that person who got me in touch with their social media team. And then I had a couple meetings with them and I was pitching myself going, this is who I am. This is what I do. I heard about the exhibit coming out. I would like to be a part of this in any way possible. And the social media manager who I ended up talking with that day was saying that he was actually browsing, you know, social media, trying to look and see what Beatles fans were talking about or, you know, how the community is. And he had actually stumbled upon my videos. Nice. And then we had ended up meeting on a call. And I told him, I said, you know, I think that this is fate. And clearly it is, because now I am working for the duration of the exhibit. I am their social media consultant. So I'm helping them out with the content that they're posting and that they're collaborating with Paul's team. I'm kind of being, you know, that second set of eyes, that second voice, because I'm a huge part of the online Beatles community. I know what fans want to see, what they might steer away from. And then I get to do a couple of collaborative posts with the museum where I might be able to show a little bit of behind the scenes, provide some of my knowledge on camera, you know, as a familiar voice, a familiar face. So I am beyond excited. This is probably the biggest collaboration that I've ever gotten as a Beatles fan. Yeah. And the fact that it's so closely affiliated with Paul, I'm thinking, somebody pinch me.
Right.
There's no way this can be real. I don't know how I've made it here this fast, but I am so thankful and so excited.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm so happy awesome. For you for that.
I love that you just like went for it. You're like, this is coming. I have to be a part of it. And you just made it happen.
It's,
like,
it's my city.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What I try to do always. It's not always a success, but that's always the mindset that I try to go in with.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. And I love the idea.
I'm glad this one stuck.
Yeah, I love the idea of doing some like behind the scenes stuff, because we actually went to a museum. We were at the Cooper Hewitt Museum in New York when we came up for Fest. Mm-hmm. We spent a couple of days in the city, and we went to one level, and they were actually setting up, like, this whole section was closed because they were, like, setting up a new exhibit. And I was like, can I just stand here for, like, 5 minutes and just watch? Like, I've never seen them, like, set up a museum before. I thought that was just, like, really cool and, like, not an exhibit. Cool, but stuff. I'm like, it's like you don't get to see that. Like, you, like, usually walk in and it's all done. And I'm like, oh, like, there's people working. Like, this is someone's job to, like, perfectly place pieces in a museum and, like, create this whole space. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I want to see how that works. Can I just hang out? I promise I won't touch anything or do anything weird. Like,
and then it's like, imagine getting to see that, but it's Paul's photography being set up on the walls.
Yeah.
So I'd just be there like, I am in heaven. Can I take one of these home with me? I know what the answer is, but I'm going to ask anyway. George in Miami. Give me that photo now.
Right? That's like the coolest George shot.
George wearing two hats. Oh. I'll take it all.
I love it.
Paul, I know you're listening. Just go ahead and send Skylar one.
Just hook it up.
Come on.
You've got the negative.
A loyal, dedicated fan. Come on. Skylar, I need something.
Skylar has earned it, Paul. So just go ahead and send it. Thank you. Yeah. Okay.
Before we move into discussing our song for the week, I was going to ask one last question, but I feel like we've probably kind of got an answer on it. What's kind of your dream goal as a Beatles creator? Like, where do you, like, pie in the sky, obviously, like, you're getting close with this gig.
Oh yeah. I don't know. I feel like, I don't know if there's ever going to be an official end to it. I mean, the end goal for me is to meet Paul and Ringo, and then I feel like I can say I've made it. But then after that, it's just going to keep going. I mean, I really just want to get my voice out there. I want to be, you know, right at the top. Just, I want to be that go-to person that everyone wants to hear about, like, their Beatle news that they want to get advice from, that they want to hear stories from. I want to be that main source of information. If I ended up working for Paul or Ringo's team, that would be extraordinary. Or any of the, or George and John's estate, just anything where I'm able to just help preserve that legacy, and I'm able to interact with fans and get my voice out there. And just, like, I already know for the most part what fans want to see and what they like to hear about, and I just want to be that person that's going to continue the joy for everyone and hopefully introduce fans to the music.
Yeah. Apple, if you're listening, Skylar is available.
Apple too.
Oh man. Fantastic. Well, why don't we turn our attention to the song of the week, shall we? It's number 94. We are well into the top 100. I did not think we were going to get this far, but look at us. Who'd have thought we'd have gotten here? Y'all, coming in this week at number 94 is Free as a Bird. The long history of Free as a Bird dates all the way back to sometime in 1977. At home in the Dakota during his house husband years, John demoed this song along with numerous others on a cassette recorder he kept on top of his piano, and supposedly this is one of several songs he'd earmarked for a possible Broadway play that was to be called The Ballad of John and Yoko. As with many demos, the song was somewhat unfinished, missing some lyrics here and there, though John did make several takes of the demo. It sat unheard in the Lennon archives for years, though it was included on the Lost Lennon tapes broadcast in 1989 and 1990. Now, a career-spanning documentary on the Beatles was something that had been in the works going all the way back to 1970, when Neil Aspinall began assembling a 90-minute retrospective called The Long and Winding Road. This project was ultimately shelved or never completed, but by the early 1990s, all the principals of Apple had agreed to work together in earnest on what would become the massive Beatles anthology project. A tricky point was going to be the members' involvement as far as new music for the project went. John had been gone for well over a decade, and the three remaining Beatles had no intention of presenting new music without John's involvement. The idea was initially floated that maybe Paul, Ringo, and George could record some instrumental, incidental music for the background of the documentary, but then history gets a bit cloudy on the exact details of what happens now, and here's how I best understand it. At some point, the idea of adding new parts to an existing unreleased John song came to the table. It seems that George and Neil had approached Yoko with the idea and asked if there might be anything worthwhile that she knew of. Paul seems to have also floated the idea to her as well, and it was agreed that there were in fact songs that might be suitable for this project. On January 19, 1994, Paul, Yoko, and Sean met at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony, where Paul was slated to induct his former partner for his solo work. On this evening, Yoko handed over to Paul the cassettes of John's demos for Free as a Bird, Real Love, Grow Old with Me, and Now and Then for the group to work on. Now, there's some conflicting stories on if Beatles producer George Martin was initially approached to work on the project. It's been said that he declined to work on the project as he was suffering hearing difficulties. However, he did also work on the vault material that was issued with the anthology. He's also stated in an interview that he wasn't especially enthused at the idea, but he may have done it differently if he'd been asked. So the Beatles needed a producer. To the rescue comes one Jeff Lynne, Electric Light Orchestra leader, traveling Wilbury, Afro-enthusiast, and the producer of George Harrison's massive 1987 comeback album Cloud Nine, who George brings to produce the session with the band. And it also gives him a producer who he's worked with and knows can maybe keep the peace and prevent issues from popping up in what was sure to be a really charged recording session. Now, Jeff has to first clean up the recording into something that's suitable for use. Being that the demo is vocals and piano recorded on just one microphone, on one track, they're essentially inextricable from each other. He uses the best technology available in 1994 to bring out the best of the vocal and piano, then aligns it to the click track to give Ringo a metronome to play along to for the recording, which is both, one, a thing that is a Jeff Lynne hallmark of his production, and two, a way to solve John's somewhat shaky tempo on the demo. From there, the group met in February 94 at Paul's Hog Hill Mill Studios in Sussex, with Lynne as producer and old Beatles engineer Jeff Emmerich working the boards. So many Jeffs on this project.
A lot of Jeffs.
Now, to overcome the admitted heavy weight of the emotions they were feeling, they agreed to use the mindset of John's gone on to lunch or off on holiday and asked us to finish off this track. Between February and March, the band recorded an entire new track around the piano and vocal arrangement, with Ringo adding drums and percussion, Paul adding bass, acoustic guitars, vocals, and piano, and George adding lead guitar, acoustic guitar, ukulele, and vocals as well. Paul and George were also able to both write new lyrics for the bridge section that John had left unfinished. Free as a Bird appeared as the first track on the Beatles Anthology 1 collection November 20th of 1995. The song and its brilliant video were premiered November 19th of 95 at the end of the first episode of the Beatles Anthology on ABC television. It peaked at number 2 in the UK radio charts and number 6 in the US. It was, of course, never performed live by the band or any of its solo members. A mouthful today. So why is Free as a Bird at number 94? Now, with the release last year of Now and Then and all the feelings that came along with that, I've been reminded a lot about the feeling I had when this song first came out, because at the time, the idea of hearing new Beatles music at that point in my life was such an amazing idea. How could this band, that didn't actually exist anymore, put out a new song? This seems so funny now to think back to like 30 years ago. This was amazing technology. The closest thing that I think had come to this was Natalie Cole's version of Unforgettable in 1991, where she re-recorded the song as a duet with her late father, Nat King Cole. And in 1991, that seemed like witchcraft, even though the process was relatively simple compared to what would come with Free as a Bird or Real Love, not to mention the miles of advancement we currently have that got us Now and Then. But in 1995, the excitement of this song was just the most amazing feeling. Not only was it new music, it was paired with this massive documentary series. I can vividly remember watching the first night of the TV broadcast on ABC, which I think there may have also been like a countdown to the song as well in the corner of the screen, if I kind of remember that. But I remember this distinct feeling of not wanting the show to end because I was loving it so much, but also wanting to get to the new song. So it was kind of like this wonderful purgatory that you were stuck in. But personally, when the song came out, I loved it, and I still do. I think there are a lot of things going on that I absolutely love about this song. If there's one kind of descriptor that I think of with Free as a Bird, one description, it's majestic. The way this song comes out the gate, pardon the bird pun here, but it just soars. John's vocal, of course, you know, it sounds distant and affected, which is a byproduct of the recording technique that was used to isolate his vocal from this kind of scratchy cassette. But it adds this real haunting element to the song that works really well and adds an ethereal feel to it. But then it's pulled back to earth by the backing vocals of Paul and George, who, though they sound very much present and in the real world, kind of bring that Beatle vocal thing to it. It's them. It sounds like them, but it sounds like them now. And I love the use of the backing vocals here to support John. It gives us the Beatles harmony like throughout so much of the whole song. Every other line there is a harmony, and it's just gorgeous. And then you get these great moments in the bridge with solitary vocals from Paul and from George, which kind of also serves as like this emotional weight, because for that moment, they're there and you remember that John's not actually here. You know, and Paul has talked about his hesitancy about George playing slide guitar on this song, but George kind of becomes the MVP with the slide guitar. You know, figuratively and literally, his parts really soar from the moment he kicks off the song, and then when he takes off in the solo, and really it brings the whole thing to a new level. It's really hard musically to convey emotion in just a melody or in a guitar part. It takes kind of like an otherworldly skill. But my God, does he pull it off? He pulls that skill off. He has it on full display on this guitar solo. I don't often like to use the word breathtaking, but when he hits that first slide part in the solo, what else can you say? And then we come back down to earth again to take the song home. And it almost feels kind of like a dream where you've been visited by a loved one for a few minutes that you didn't think you'd ever see again. A lot of people at the time found excuses to shit on the song that seemed kind of based around the same unfulfillable expectations that they had for Now and Then all these years later. You know, songwriters don't just have a couple of unreleased A Day in the Life sitting in their sock drawer on a cassette tape. But in this case, you had a really great song that the author wasn't able to bring to its full potential, but his old partners could, and do it with real love and care. I don't think that element of reality is extractable from this song, or from Real Love, or Now and Then. It's just as much a part of the story of what makes the song great as John having no voice left and singing Twist and Shout, like his life depends on it, is for that song. Like, this is what makes Free as a Bird so heavy. Now, there are some things production-wise I'm not super fond of, purely from a personal aesthetic, and that's the Jeff Lynne production technique that's a big part of that. It does feel like there's a ton of stuff musically happening in this song, like maybe a little too much, and honestly, I'm okay with that, though, because, like, it shouldn't sound like a pale imitation of a George Martin production. That would be almost like a pastiche. Somehow it sounds like the Beatles in their 50s being produced by Jeff Lynne, and that's cool. I'm super glad it exists because this song just makes me super happy to listen to, and I genuinely love it and always get the feels whenever it comes on. Aww. So, whew, that was a whole lot.
That was a big one.
Skylar, I throw the ball to you.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, when you compare it, it's so funny because a year ago, Free as a Bird and Real Love, those were the newest Beatles songs that we had. And then we got Now and Then at the end of the year. So right now I'm comparing Free as a Bird to Now and Then. And Now and Then is just so beyond crisp. They really blew us out of the park with that. Mm-hmm. And then you go back and listen to Free as a Bird and the quality is not horrible, but it's a bit hard to understand, you know, what they're singing at certain points. And you're thinking, okay, but then when you really look at the lyrics, you go, oh my gosh, this is the most beautiful song. Like, it was about a year ago that whenever my favorite Beatles song is constantly changing because it's always, I apply my favorite Beatles song to whatever, you know, situation I'm going through in my life. So for anything that I'm going through, you know, like I have a certain Beatles song that, you know, I just constantly have on repeat that's just carrying me through it. And for what I was going through a year ago, Free as a Bird was that song for me because it really just hit home. So I have that personal tie to it, and that's why I love it so much. Quality-wise, it's obviously not going to be top tier, but they did the best that they could with the technology that they had at the time. And mm-hmm. I think that's extraordinary. And the fact that they had that going into that mindset of recording, saying, oh, you know, John's just on vacation. He's just not here right now. So we're going to record this. That just broke my heart when you said that. I'm sitting here going, oh my gosh.
Right.
Because I didn't know that they went in with that. Because imagine if they hadn't, they'd all be sitting there. We'd have a crying take
right.
of Free as a Bird, which, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I don't even want to think. It's just, I'm thinking about all the emotion behind it. And then even for the fans that were hearing it for the first time when it came out, imagine you have the Anthology 1 album and that's the first song that you hear. And then it suddenly goes into all of this dialogue from the Beatles in their Beatlemania days, their very, very first recordings, and just going that far back. So you're hearing Free as a Bird, you know the context of everything at that point, you know how John has passed, they're not a band anymore, and then it takes you right back to the beginning. That is beyond incredible. And they did the same thing with Now and Then, because what's the B-side of Now and Then? Love Me Do.
Yeah.
Their first single. So it's just funny, those little parallels like that. But overall, that song, to me, emotionally, it hits close to home. And I think that's really all that matters to me. Emotionally, if it hits, if I connect with the lyrics, then it is going to be a top favorite of all time for me. I'd say it's definitely in my top 10.
Really? Wow. Okay, cool.
Yes.
That's awesome.
It's meant that much to me. Now and Then is also up there as well.
Yeah.
For sure.
Nice.
Amazing.
I feel like I went through there was probably a phase where I didn't listen to Free as a Bird as much as other stuff. Probably only because of like availability. Like I don't own the anthologies on vinyl because like I just don't have them. They're very expensive. I have everything else, but as I've gotten older and
now you can just go on Spotify.
Yeah. Like as I listen on Apple Music, like I play it all the time and I'm like, God, this song is fucking beautiful. Like sometimes it comes on in the car and I'm just like, good God, like that guitar is just,
like, oh, it's one of those moments.
Yeah. It's just, it's gorgeous.
Wasn't going to cry, but here we are.
Right. What do you think about this one, Julia?
Well, first thoughts out of the gate.
Was this on your radar when it came out, like in real time?
Yes, I do. I don't know that I like sat down and watched the anthology,
sure.
But I do remember like the commercials for it. Like I know that it was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I maybe watched a little bit of it, and I think I did because when we were talking about this, like while you were setting up, and I feel like I do remember a countdown. So mm-hmm. like if anyone saw this on TV, can you confirm or deny like the presence of like a little ticker like in the corner of the screen, like counting down to like when they're going to play the new song? I don't know. For some reason that
because like it aired after the credits or after maybe not after credits, but like at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Like whenever they cut that, it went to the new single.
Yeah. Like I wonder if maybe I watched a little bit of it. Like I definitely didn't watch the whole thing.
Sure.
or maybe I just like sat down and watched the video for the new song or something. I don't know. Like I do have a vague memory of it. It does exist for me.
Okay.
It's
also interesting to see. Oh, go ahead.
No, good.
Go ahead.
Mm-mm.
It's also interesting to see the different ways in which we were counting down to the release, because I don't know how long of an announcement did they give? Like when they first announced that Free as a Bird was going to be released, how long was it before it actually was released?
I think it was a few months. Like I actually, you know what? Last year when I was in California at my guitar player's house, they had an old Newsweek magazine from 1995 that the Beatles were on the cover of it. And it was like, you know, the second coming of the Beatles was the headline, I think. And it was talking about the upcoming release of the anthology and Free as a Bird. And I don't know if it mentioned Real Love, but this was like in the summer of 95. So like you knew it was coming.
You had a lot of time.
I feel like there was a lot of lead up, which like you don't get that nowadays.
Now and Then. Now and Then. Yeah, I think we have maybe what, like
a week or two at most?
Not even. It was very short. So then, of course, we're all freaking out. And then you guys had to wait for the TV countdown. And then for us, it was YouTube and then countdown. Spotify. You know, we're just refreshing. We're waiting. And then we got that documentary. And then we got the music video. And then we got the song. It was just so much thrown out at once. I don't know why they didn't do such a big lead up to that like they did with the anthology tracks.
I've thought about that. And
just different time period?
I think the cycle is just so fast now. Like, mm-hmm. if, you know,
just want to get it out.
If you announce something now and you wait 2 months to put it out, people are going to forget about it when it is kind of like a fast release and it's coming out in a week. Everyone's out. The buzz is there. You're in the zeitgeist. Yeah. This is not a knock, but like everything just kind of comes and goes fast. Like Now and Then came in, was at number one, did like 3 weeks on the chart and was out. But like everything is like that now, unless it's like,
it's just so weird. Yeah. To think about how quickly you can get over something now, because then I'm sure when you first got Free as a Bird and Real Love and all of those unreleased tracks, everyone was probably talking about it for much longer than that.
Yeah.
Months probably, because it was something so, so new and you didn't know that you were going to have the technology to be able to do that at that time. Mm-hmm.
Like it was new.
So I'm sure it was just major news.
Yeah. It was major news. You had, because the anthology was shown in a 6 hour edit over 3 Sunday nights consecutively. And I think the record came out like a week or two in. So the single, the song was being worked as a single, and then the anthology one came out. And then it was like, it was coming out on VHS, and like there was, you also had VH1 and MTV that were playing the video. So mm-hmm. like it was out there, like it was always kind of on something, you know, and, they were all being interviewed for things, and like just the press cycle and the promo cycles were so much longer mm-hmm. back then than they are now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish that it was that way now.
I know. Yeah. Right.
I wonder if it's because you just had like, much fewer like
options,
ways outlets. To yeah outlets mm-hmm. like ways to communicate with people, like it was just like TV and like print,
yeah,
like there was no
right
there was a little internet back then, but like not widely used like mm-hmm. it is now. There was no social media, like so you had to catch people when they happened to be watching TV. Like there was no YouTube to there was no like you couldn't stream the 6 p.m. news at 9 p.m. like you couldn't.
If you wanted to watch Free as a Bird, you had to watch likely VH1, because that was the network that skewed older than MTV.
Yeah.
And wait for it to come on.
Yeah.
And just try to catch it.
Yeah. And to, like, advertise things, you would have to, like, just keep putting it up. And, like, whenever people sat down to watch TV, like, you had to catch them at that point.
You had to wait for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just, like, blasting everything for months. Luck of the draw, basically. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Like, there was no, like, constant talking about things, because it was TV, newsprint, and water coolers. That's it.
And radio.
And radio. Sorry. Yeah. I forget. But like, yeah, that's wild. Mm-hmm. So they sort of had to do like a very long press cycle, because to reach people, it's much easier now.
Yeah.
You just send them a little notification on their phone.
When Free as a Bird came out, I've heard a couple of my friends speak about how like, you know, the buzz about the Beatles was starting to come back at that time because of, you know, the anthologies and then the one album and everything. So. Mm-hmm. When Free as a Bird came out, was it like that, like amongst friends? Were they all talking about it, saying, oh, did you hear the new Beatles song? Did you hear this was happening? What was that like?
As I mentioned, I had no real Beatle friends, but my friends all of a sudden knew of this thing. And they at least were like, how do they have a new song? Like they were curious as to how that happened, because John Lennon had been dead for 15 years. So I think they listened to it. They knew it existed. They heard it. But I think it was a combination of that, and then you also had, like, the Britpop explosion of, like, 94, 95, 96, mm-hmm. of your Oasis, Verve, Blur, Pulp, Elastica, all these British bands that were hitting the charts and also going, like, the Beatles are the best thing since sliced bread. Like
the Beatles are the best thing since us.
Right. Like you had
what Oasis would say.
You had what was cool at the moment saying, this is what it's all about. While This Is What It's All About was also back on your television and on your radio for the first time in 30 years. So it was a really, I think those two kind of things converged to really boost up the awareness of the band to younger people. Because then all of a sudden, like, my friends might have the Red or Blue album who didn't have anything before. Like, they're like, well, some of that stuff's pretty cool. Like, and I think that kind of boosted it back a little bit more into, like, the youthful zeitgeist. I think that was a lot of it, was those two things.
Yeah. We always get something every few years, it seems like, that's going to bring in new Beatles fans. Like, we just have Now and Then, and then in a couple of years, like, it's always, like, a few years span. Like, so in a couple of years, we're going to get the movies that come out, and then that's going to be a whole explosion. And it's just Free as a Bird anthology. That was just, that was that moment. Like, for that time period, you had that, and then it's, like, he had a couple years, and then it was the one album, and then, you know, it just keeps going.
Yeah.
There's always going to be something. Like, we're never, it's just incredible that even though they are not, you know, a group anymore, and that two of them have passed, there's always going to be new content coming out for us to enjoy. Just the fact that they're always constantly coming up with, you know, re-releases or, you know, brand new footage. There's always something to look forward to.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's like that with the Beatles, and it's been going on since the 60s, that's what blows my mind. Because I know, I hardly know any other bands that are exactly like that, that can keep, you know, that momentum going. And that's why they're extraordinary. That's why I love them to that much.
Yeah. I'm so glad you say, I'm so glad you're saying that, because that reminds me of something I was thinking about during the panel we were on, where I got this overwhelming sense from some of the people that, like, they view the Beatles story as what existed 1963 to 1970. After that, it does not count. I think that this story is ongoing. Like,
it always is.
You can look at, you know, the active years of them as a unit as one thing. But I don't think that the story, the output, the creative entity of the Beatles is near finished. And that's why, like, I don't have any problem with remixes, unreleased stuff, you know, new songs being created. Like, they're creating this a story that no one else has done. Like, no other band has had this journey over a 60-year period.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
right.
It's all new content to me. It's all part of an ongoing thing. Like, it's not just like, oh, the stuff that came out when I was 15 is the best thing. Like, no, it's all the best thing. Like, you're getting
you can't
so much
disregard
to enjoy
their solo years either.
Yeah.
Like, even the solo years going into all that, and they were still keeping in touch with each other, you know, where you had, you know, Paul and John writing diss tracks towards one another. You know, there's just so much of that Beatle lore that's going to continue throughout all their lives. And even, like, today, you know, we're still talking about John, we're still talking about George, and we're going to keep talking about all four of them. There's always so much to unpack and so many new stories that we're going to learn every single day. Like, we might know, you know, the surface level of some stories now, and then there could be a Paul interview that comes out tomorrow where he just goes, you know, below the surface and starts giving us all this detail that we didn't know. Like, you don't know what's going to come next, and that's the beauty of it.
Yep. I feel like I've cut you off, and I'm sorry.
Okay.
Now
you're
and
fine.
Then, or free as a bird, Julia, what are you thinking?
What song are we talking
Which
about
Which new
today?
Song are we talking about?
I will say Hog Hill Mills Studios is a terrible name, and that should have not happened.
Well,
it's very hard to say, and I don't care for it. Do you know why it's named that?
I assume that is the name of the hill on his property that the studio was on.
Oh.
Because, yeah, it's
Hog Hill.
Yeah, it's on a it's in a repurposed mill on his property.
I'll allow it.
It's a home studio. It's this room.
It's also a mouthful to say.
It is.
It's hard to say.
It's this room with billions of dollars in your pocket.
Fair. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So go on.
I wish we knew more about, like, why it was so disliked by so many people when it came out. Was do you think people were expecting something like peppier, like sort of like early career stuff, like the
A little bit. I think it's that. I think people have unfair expectations of unreleased music. You know, like I kind of mentioned in my thing, like you don't just have an extra A Day in the Life sitting around on a hard drive that you didn't finish up. You know, like.
I mean, I don't know.
Some people do.
Like, that's not fair because George is like trying to get songs out and get back, and they're like, no.
Okay,
and then he goes and releases this amazing album. So
that's
like.
True. But, like, but it's not.
He said, I done told y'all. I told y'all.
Right. Should have listened to me.
You didn't want to listen.
I've been telling y'all since 1966.
Debuting at number one, baby.
I think people were expecting to have something that came out that was life-altering and earth-shattering.
Okay, well, that's unrealistic.
And, I think that's because the Beatles have such a high bar, they're expecting the greatest thing that they've heard in 40 years. And I think that's an unfair expectation.
I feel like they built themselves up at that point, though, that everyone knew the Beatles and knew just how fantastic that they could be. And they could have released anything and people would have been praising it because it's new material. It's something that they were able to create using John's old demos. And I feel like it could have been anything and people would have just adored it because it was something so new and unlike it would have been nothing they would have expected.
Yeah. There's like two sides, like the people that will love it regardless and the people that will sort of hate it regardless.
Yeah.
Like,
and I think a lot of that, I think a lot of that second part you get from people who, especially in the wake of like kind of the grunge movement, people who just kind of naturally looked at things that might seem artistically suspect in a way, with like
uncool
and like real derision. And also it's not helped by like George, who like made a couple of comments in the press at the time saying like, you know, I hope one day someone finds my crap demos and turns them into number one hits. You know, like,
oh, Georgie.
I also did. I read that he referred to this song at one point as "free as a turd," just amazing. I love him. He's so
That's curmudgeonly. There you go, George Harrison, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes,
the curmudgeonly.
That's all. That just completely encapsulates him.
Yeah, yeah.
And even I know he wasn't really that big on Now and Then either. I think he just. That's what also why people didn't like that song, was because they were saying, oh, well, George didn't like it, why are they releasing it? And it's like, no, he just didn't like, you know, the way it was recorded. So Free as a Bird was probably the same thing.
Like, and that's why they did
this
one first.
He was beyond his lifetime. He was just beyond. He knew that like it could have been better if they waited longer and had better technology. I'd be like, he just knew.
Yeah. So there's going to be a man named Peter Jackson. Wait for him.
The prophecy will be fulfilled. Yes. You'll see.
He will have what you need.
Save this acoustic guitar track. Trust me. Anything else? What else you got?
I think it's a lovely song. Like, I do, like, on one hand, it's a little weird that sort of the vocal tones are so different.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's kind of cool. Like, sort of the effect, I guess, I shouldn't really call it an effect because it's just, like, a crappy tape recorder. It's not really an effect.
But it's, like dystopian in a way.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit. But it's also, like, a nice counterpoint to like the lightness of the song. Like, it is, it's a very like light song to me. It's like very light and breezy. I never really thought too much about the lyrics until I like sat down and listened to it on my little Apple Music app with like the lyrics playing, and I'm like, oh, that was like some really nice stuff that Paul's little verse that he did, like can we really live without each other, like, oh
yeah,
I feel like you kind of meant that. Yeah, like that's real sweet.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that gets me with these songs, especially, is like there's a moment in the Now and Then documentary where it's a quick cut of, I think they're working on the string overdubs, and Paul's sitting in the control room of the studio and just has this look of like immense concentration and immense focus. And it's that look of like the guy who you feel like is really trying to do right by his partner, who he's, you know, been missing for 43 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been thinking about this song for 20 something years, knowing that there's something to it and saying, I want to finish that. Like, he knew there was something to that song.
Yeah.
It almost feels like, you know, like the concept of like the hero's journey, of like, you know, seeing the journey through to its like necessary conclusion, felt like that. And this feels like part of that journey of like, you know, they wanted to like do right by him, you know?
Yeah. And I know he wanted to make John proud because that was, you know, his partner with everything. They had this incredible bond, this incredible love for each other that just spanned so many years and went so deep. And so I know he's sitting there thinking, you know, I want to make John proud. I want to do this for him because he's my best friend and I love him and I want to finish this and put it out there, you know, in the way that he would have wanted. And I feel like Paul did it justice. George and Ringo, they all did well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all did it. But I can sense like where they're all coming from going into this, especially Paul, because I know that relationship, like, you know, they were all friends obviously, but John and Paul had, you know, this whole other level.
Yeah,
this whole other level to them. So I can imagine him going in with that mindset and just thinking, this needs to be as close to perfect as it can get.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Aww. Yeah. Babes. So sweet. Yeah. They loved each other.
Yeah.
It was just like
they did.
Just like
they
brothers. Did. You know, like they just like would fight and then they'd be like, I love you. Get over here, you big galoot. You know?
Literally they were an old married couple from the start.
Yes.
Honestly.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So sweet.
So at 94, I know you said this would be top 10 for you. Do you think 94 is
yes.
And obviously We're way off then because I'm at 94. What do you think, Julie? Do you think this is ballpark? Am I in the ballpark here? Would you have it higher or lower?
I don't know. I feel like I'd have it a little lower.
Like toward like in a higher number or
like a higher number.
Okay.
Like behind us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I think it's lovely.
Yeah.
Like I'm not sending it all the way back to 223. Don't worry. But I don't know. Maybe someday it'll grab me. So, like, it hasn't grabbed me. I haven't had a Skylar moment with it.
It will.
I needed to yeah. like, associate to a thing mm-hmm. to climb my list.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's how I judge all my favorite Beatles songs is if it's hit me at, like, a personal moment in yes. my life and the lyrics have hit and it's really helped me in that way. That's how I judge my favorite Beatles songs. Or also by nostalgia, because if it's a song that's been there for me since my early days as a fan and it's still there now, then I hold it in very high regard.
Yeah. I'm sure there's not a whole lot of people that have like I've just seen a face in their top 10.
I bet you there is.
You think?
I would bet you there is.
Maybe.
Well, that's up there.
For I wouldn't say my top 10, you know. but it's up there because I was in a music video for the band The Weaklings.
Yeah.
Who they are a Beatles tribute band, but they also put out their own incredible material. I was not planning on making this plug, but I just had this connection because they did a cover of I've Just Seen a Face. I was in the music video for that. And nice. So whenever I hear that song, it takes me back to that time.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that was just such a fun experience and I love that. So I wouldn't say top 10, but it is definitely maybe top 25, I'd say.
Yeah.
That's fair.
It's up there.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Just based on memory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I like it.
Well, before we wrap for the evening, because I do want to let you go at some point and go have dinner and enjoy the rest of the evening.
I already did.
Oh, smart. Well, we have not.
I came prepared.
I love it.
Listen to Tommy 7 more times.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's my nighttime routine. Oh. Eat some chocolate.
Oh, that's the way to do it. Oh,
take man. A nice little snooze. Yes.
I like it.
Well, before we go, we do have a few rapid fire questions for you. And as I mentioned in our email, they don't need to be rapid answers. They almost never are. But very simple. And the first one you kind of alluded to earlier that you might not have a single answer, but your favorite Beatles song, and it can be today, it can be this year, it can be if there is an all-time Desert Island, whatever your favorite is.
If I had to pick one all-time favorite, I always go with Long, Long, Long because mm-hmm. it's on my favorite album of theirs. I think it's extremely underrated in general, but it was one of those songs that I was hearing, you know, in the first couple of weeks that I was really getting into the Beatles, and I just thought that it sounded so beautiful. And now even hearing the lyrics, it's been a long, long, long time. You know, how could I ever have lost you? Now I'm so happy I found you, how I love you. And that's how I feel about the Beatles as a whole, because it's me thinking now, I'm so happy that I found you all. You know, you're the reason that I'm doing what I do today, the reason I'm putting myself out there, the reason that I have the friends that I do. So I feel like that song just encapsulates how I feel about the band in the most perfect way.
I love it.
So I had to, that is the top.
That's a good one too.
That's a lovely answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like it.
And that's a great song. I was listening to that today.
You're going to cry over there, Julia.
I'm sorry. I'm okay.
She's schmoopy today, man.
Sometimes I'm a little sap.
Sometimes the Juliatron 3000
has a feeling. I've sprung a leak.
Malfunctions in some way.
Oil dripping from eye. Having a feeling.
I did it.
Reset.
I made it crack.
You did it. Oh, man. Okay, now on the flip side, your least favorite Beatles song. Do you have a least favorite?
I was trying so hard to think of a least favorite. And, you know, everyone's go-to answer, I feel like, is always Revolution 9 or Wild Honey Pie or anything crazy like that. But honestly, I have to be in a specific mood to listen to those so I can kind of vibe with it. But yeah. I don't have a Beatles song where like I hear it and I go, oh my God, shut that off immediately. Like, I'll hear some songs that I'm like, oh, okay. You know, like from the earlier years, like there's some songs off of Please Please Me or with the Beatles that sometimes I hear them. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, I can skip this, whatever. Yeah. But like, there's nothing out of pure disgust that I'm like, oh, I hate it. You know?
Yeah, I can get with that.
Which is weird. I feel like I'm biased with that because I'm like, oh, it's the Beatles. I love all their music. And it's like, I do. But there are just some songs that I'm like, you know, we can skip it.
Yeah.
I don't care too much. Like, and it's mainly the earlier years for me because I'm more of a later Beatles fan.
Yeah. Like for me, like, and I, it's my least favorite. I don't hate it, but like if Come Give Me Dine Hand or Sleep Deep come on, I don't need to hear that. I'm skipping. Like,
if Mr. Moonlight comes on,
you didn't like it when they played it in the TWA then? They played the German version. I didn't hear of She Loves You.
I didn't hear
they
it.
They played it.
And if I did, I'd probably just be like,
oh, okay. I got excited over that because I don't hear that normally.
Yeah. It's just one of them, like.
You don't hear that out and about in the wild.
You
I'm
don't.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah. We're getting this deep into their discography. This is great.
Someone here is a fan.
It's not in the rotation on SiriusXM.
No, I don't think. It might be. I don't, they played What's it the New Mary be. Jane today. I was impressed by
oh,
that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. What's your favorite Beatles album?
The White Album.
White Album?
It was that album and Sgt. Pepper were the first albums that I really started to dive into mm-hmm. when I became a fan. But the White Album, I feel like just no two songs are the same. It was as they were getting towards the end of their career and you're hearing each of their, you know, styles of music, like what they ended up creating in their solo years. I feel like it all kind of converged on the White Album. Mm-hmm. So you can clearly tell like, oh, that's a Paul song or that's a John song. Like you just know that it's them because it's not like the early Beatle years where most of the songs they were creating all sounded the same. You know, this was when they were really starting to find their artistic voices and their personalities and where they wanted to go. So it's all of that in one album. It feels like you're listening to five different genres and I love it.
Yeah. Fantastic. Who's your favorite Beatle?
John Winston Ono Lennon.
Love it. Love it. Love it.
He deserves the full name.
I love it.
But no, he's, actually, he wasn't my favorite to begin with. It was Ringo for maybe a week or two because I enjoyed his sense of humor the most. And then it was George for, I'd say, a month or two because I thought that he was the cutest and I was starting to listen to a lot of his solo music. But then I started listening to more of John's solo music and his was the music I was most familiar with. I would listen to some songs and I'd say, oh my gosh, I've heard this on the radio my whole life. I didn't know this was John. And then just the more documentaries I started to watch about him and the more Beatles footage I watched, I realized that our personalities are so similar. Like every little thing that I learned about him, I said, oh my gosh, that is literally me. Like this is me in Beatle form. And then just the amount of pictures I started to look at of him and I realized, oh my gosh, we look so much alike. What is going on? And then it's weird because in high school, I look at pictures of me now and I'm like, I look nothing like him. Why did I think I looked so much like him? But now I've just morphed. I've morphed because I've connected with just him and, you know, his struggles the most, his feelings, like all of his insecurities and everything. I see that in myself and I feel like I can empathize with him in that way. So yeah. I feel like we have a connection.
I love it.
Some kind of otherworldly connection. And he will always be my favorite because of that.
Oh. I love that. Last one, your favorite memory associated with Beatles, anything Beatles. It can be, you know, a song was playing during a certain thing or.
You're like my entire life.
It's everything. There's so much. They're associated with so many good memories, so many, you know, now sad memories to look back on. But I mean, I'd say if you want a happy memory, I would say when I was maybe about 5 or 6 years old, this was the first Beatles song I listened to. My dad would always play Love Me Do, and we would always dance around our living room together to that song. And he would change up the lyrics to sing it to me personally. So he'd say, love, love me do, you're my dig-a-doo. He would sing that to me. And so I always referred to it as the dig-a-doo song.
I love that.
And from there on out, and I remember, oh my gosh, my mom and I were at some toy store at one point when I was around that age, maybe a tiny bit older. And I remember the song had been playing in the store and we came back home and I went to my dad and I said, Dad, they were playing the Dig-a-Doo song.
I love that.
And it was one of the first songs when I got my first iPod. I asked my dad to download it on there because that was the one song. It was just, you know, a childhood favorite. It was that nostalgia. And I was like, I need to have that with me. Put that song on there now.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that's not my ultimate favorite Beatles song today, but it is up there.
That's
just because of that. It was the first one I remember listening to and I didn't know that I was going to end up coming to that later in life.
Yeah. I love that. That's super. That's a great story. Like I do that with songs to you all the time.
All the time.
I do it to JoJo and Maxwell all the time.
Yes. Like
everyone gets songs.
Personalized songs in this house.
Yeah.
It's a good time. Yeah. It's a good time. Well, it's also, you're really good at it. Mm. Like making up fake words to real songs in a really funny way. It's like,
and that's my dad's specialty.
Yes. Yeah,
clearly he still does it today.
Nice.
Now it's just annoying, but back then I was like, oh, this is fun.
So charming.
Well, I gotta... Now I'm like, okay, you've done enough. It's fine.
I feel like your dad and Jonathan should hang out. Just do dad stuff.
That's like the most cliche, like, Beatle fan thing is like, you'd be good friends with my dad. You and my dad would get along.
Literally, I already know, just at Fest, I know so many people he would get along with.
Oh, yeah, instantly. For sure. Skylar, thank you so much for making time to hang out with us. I'm so glad we got to connect and chat. And I also wanted to say, I'm so glad that you were literally the first person that we ran into at Beatles Fest. Because, like, we were like,
it's fate.
Trying to figure out where the hell to go.
There you go.
Didn't know where to be. And then saw you, and you were charming and welcoming and friendly and nice. And it was like, okay, we're going to be good. Like, this is going to be awesome. I'm very excited.
You're always, I appreciate that. And yeah. I'm glad you guys had a great time. And thank you for having me on.
Of course.
It has been so much fun.
Where can everybody follow you on social media and keep in touch with all the cool stuff that you're doing?
If you're on TikTok, you can follow me at lucyinthesky.lar. Or if you just go to skylarmoody.com, you can find the rest of my social medias on there. If you search my name anywhere, you will find me.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, thank you so much. And, you know, we've got 93 songs left to do. So if there's anything that we haven't done yet that you'd like to come back and do, we'd love to have you on again.
Absolutely. Excellent. I'm always happy to come back.
Wonderful. Skylar Moody, y'all, what a fun time. So much fun getting to chat. We had such a good time hanging out at the fest together.
Yes.
And, like, Skylar was all over the place. Like, frenetically running around. I don't want to say frantic, because it wasn't frantic.
No.
But just, like, running around constantly, getting audio and video and being on panels and all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
It was like a whirling dervish of Beatle energy.
That's a very good way of putting it.
Yes.
In the best way.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah, be sure to follow Skylar on all your socials. Absolutely wonderful content, super fun, and just makes being a Beatle fan on the internet a little more fun. You know, puts a little smile on your face. That's what it's all about. What do y'all think about Free as a Bird at number 94 out of 224? Are we too high? Are we too low? Or just like old Baby Bear's porridge, is it
just right?
Yeah, there it is. I missed it. It's nice to hear it again. You'd think we would do that when we're not on mic, but we don't have to do that.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
It's reserved for the show
it's
only.
For y'all only. So let us know what you think about Free as a Bird number 94. Let us know in the comments, wherever you're following along. If you're looking for us on any of the social media platforms, you can find us on Facebook over at...
Ooh, it's been a minute. Ranking the Beatles.
That's right. If you're looking for us on Instagram, we're on there at
Ranking the Beatles.
Ah,
no.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
Oh.
Yeah. I almost had it wrong.
Ooh.
And if you're looking for us on Twitter, you can find us at
Ranking Beatles.
Skylar's got me kind of thinking we should have a TikTok, but I'm also like, I don't know. What's the point? I don't know.
I don't have time. It's on you.
You don't do any of it anyway.
Exactly.
I don't have the time.
I don't even know what to put on a TikTok.
Yeah.
I'm leaning hard into my meme-on-ness.
Yes.
I know. You're rubbing my shoulder.
We've got to wrap it up and go put new tennis balls on your walker, mama. and be sure to check out rankingthebeatles.com, the hub, the home of all things Ranking the Beatles. Grab yourself a Ranking the Beatles poster. Skylar actually did a really cool video showcasing our poster after the fest, which I will reshare when we post this. If you want to join in the fun and rank your own Beatles, you can grab one at rankingthebeatles.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can grab a t-shirt or a sweatshirt or any swag that we have.
I rocked I ranked all 223 Beatles songs, and all I got was this lousy shirt.
Yep.
Sweatshirt at Fest. And
yeah,
I got lots of compliments.
And
they were
like, nice.
But it was nothing compared to the man who was wearing it was like a t-shirt, and it had a picture of the Beatles on it, and it said First Kids on the Block and the New Kids on the Block font. And as an elder millennial, that just really tickled
spoke
me
to you. Yeah.
I laughed so hard, and I took a photo with him.
It's on our Instagram feed.
Yeah.
Check it
so
out.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Well, y'all, that's all we got for this week. We'll see you next week with a brand new episode, we promise. Until then, I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Julia.
This has been Ranking the Beatles. Adios.
Bye, y'all.